Hey, it's Jeff Zito, and thanks for listening to another episode of the Celebrity Jobber Podcast, where you can check out all of our past episodes on celebrityjobber.com. Follow us on Instagram, the Celebrity Jobber Podcast, our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@CelebrityJobber. And of course, you can stream us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe. Would appreciate a 5-star rating and leave a review. My next guest became very famous from his role as Ducky in the movie Pretty in Pink, which has become a cult classic John Hughes movie back from 1986. Since he has starred in numerous film and TV stuff, where he became a household name once again with his role as Alan Harper, brother of Charlie Harper, played by Charlie Sheen in the sitcom 2 and a Half Men. Did he ever have a real job? In Wikipedia, it said when John Cryer's mother heard that he wanted to be an actor, she said he should have a backup plan and joked, quote, plumbing is a pretty good career. I don't believe it's ever come to that. And is actually the star of a new sitcom on NBC called Extended Family. And we'll also talk about a project of John's, which does not involve acting. My guest this week on Celebrity Jobber, actor John Cryer.
The Celebrity Jobber Podcast with Jeff Zito. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, give a 5-star rating, and leave a review. Check out all our past episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you pod. What if these celebrities weren't famous? What would they have become? What was their first job? We're about to find out.
Hey, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm going to throw one at you that you might have not heard of in a long time, but maybe you have. Morgan Stewart coming home.
Wow, that is a deep cut.
Is that it really? I mean, I loved that film when I was younger. I don't know why I related to it so much. I didn't go to boarding school or have parents in politics or anything like that, but I just loved it. It was always on, you know, when I was growing up.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, that was a tough project. That was the first thing I did after Pretty in Pink, and they fired the director about a week into it and completely rewrote the script. So it was sort of like this weird thing of like, I agreed to do this movie, but this is a different movie.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what this is. Yeah. So you kind of have to just show up every day and just do your best.
Does that happen a lot, John, in your biz where you're, you know, you read for a part and everything's cool and then they just decide to change it?
Thankfully, it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen sometime. And it does sort of let you know that the actors are in a weird place because, like, the director ended up taking his name off the movie.
Oh, wow.
It's now one of those famous Alan Smithy movies. You know, Alan
right.
Smithy is the pseudonym that directors use when they're so ashamed of what they've done. I get to say, I made a movie with Alan Smithy. But the actors, you know, your face is all over you. There's no hiding for you.
Right.
You know,
you're stuck with it.
You're stuck with it. That being said, you still manage to feel lucky every day that you get to work on things. You know, I think there's something lost in it for actors when they start taking this stuff for granted, because, you know, so many things have to come together for a project to get off the ground at all. That you really gotta, you know, whenever they yell rolling, you gotta feel lucky for those opportunities.
And John, you're kind of, if you know, your family was in the business, mom and dad were in the business. So did you know that you wanted to be an actor, you know, as you know, when you were a little kid? When did you decide that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I did kind of grow up backstage. My parents are both theater actors in New York. And so I, you know, you would go backstage and it was like this crazy wonderland of all these insane characters, you know, because actors are nuts. I don't know if you know that. We're all kind of weird, nutty people. And so I just kind of wanted to be a part of that world. It just seemed fun as a kid. And because and it's interesting because recently there's been this whole discussion about nepotism in show business, and it absolutely is a real thing. But it's just you don't get It's not like the old school nepotism of the guy who owns the company who gives it to his idiot son and says, here, run the company. You know, because actors never feel like they have control over their lives. But the nepotism that you do get in the acting profession is because you're around it as a kid, you have this gut level comfort in it that people coming from it from other worlds don't have. You know, you sort of understand that it's going to be crazy and it's going to be unfair. And you sort of take that for granted in a way that makes it is easier. You know, going on all those auditions and stuff like that just feels different when you sort of get that's the deal. You know, that's the way this is going
to
be.
Did your mom and dad try to deter you from being an actor? Did they say, look, you know, go to college, have a backup plan. If it works out, it works out. Or were they supportive?
Well, they managed to do both. Like, my mom actually paid for this very expensive at the time theater camp that I went to. And if you ever see the movie Theater Camp, that's exactly what it was like. It's a ridiculous, ridiculous place. So they ponied up. I mean, they, you know, where it counted, they absolutely supported me. But they also subtly said, you get that this is totally unfair and that you may be a wonderful actor. That doesn't mean you'll be able to have a career as an actor.
Right.
You know, because it has to be two things. It has to be a marketplace that needs your services enough that, you know, and I managed to be a teenager right when they were making all those teen movies. I managed to do that. I managed to be a certain age. But if there isn't a marketplace for your talent, you know, that's when you can do it and be wonderful at it, but it doesn't mean that you'll actually make a living.
What about a first job, John? Maybe a two-part question here. Did you ever have a first job outside of acting? And what was your first paying gig?
I was one of those people on the street who try to hand you bills that you really just don't want, you know, when they hand you flyers on the street.
Okay.
And the great thing about that job is you learn about rejection. People
yes.
really don't want you to hand them pieces of paper on the street. They really don't. They want to go someplace. They're headed someplace else. You've got to figure out, okay, how am I going to figure out a way to get these people to take this piece of paper? And it does help, actually. You know, getting used to rejection is very helpful.
What about your first acting gig? How old were you? What was it?
My first acting gig was as Matthew Broderick's understudy in a Broadway play called Brighton Beach Memorial.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, and his Broadway performance of it was astonishing. It was like a 2.5-hour show, and it was just a tour de force. He was amazing in that show.
Eugene Morris Jerome, that was you. You were the understudy.
Yeah, that was me.
Okay,
yeah,
that's very cool.
And absolutely, yeah, I was terrified. I was terrified, and I ended up getting fired from it. It was my first job and first firing.
Oh, wow. What about your big break? I mean, a lot of people think, you know, Ducky from Pretty in Pink. Was that the role that kind of changed your life, got things moving and shaking for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I was incredibly lucky to have that happen. That was like my second or third movie. So I was, you know, that sort of having a persona that, you know, having a role that really, that people really enjoyed and really resonated with people at that age was incredibly lucky. You know, it's because all of a sudden you have a sort of a trademark, you know, and whenever you walk in the room somewhere, people go, oh yeah, it was that Ducky guy. You
right.
know? And a lot of people feel like they're pigeonholed by that, but I always felt like it was an honor, you know, because again, you don't get chances to get in front of people and have them really take a character to heart, you know, and that they did for me was, you know, that made me feel incredible.
Was it tough being an actor at that time when you were so young and, you know, the Brat Pack and the parties and was it kind of, you know, a tough environment to be thrown into all of a sudden at such an early age?
No, it was mostly fun. It was mostly fun. Although, interestingly, nobody ever offered me drugs. This is
really,
and this was the time when cocaine was supposedly being trucked in like in dump trucks, and nobody ever offered me coke. And I remember, like at one point, I wrote a memoir called "So That Happened," which came out a few years ago. And I, but an alternate title was "No Coke for Ducky," because I would go to these parties and I would hear about all this, you know, horrible decadence that was going on behind the scenes, and none of it. And I saw none of it. I saw none of it.
That's awesome.
I think it was because I gave off this weird wholesome vibe, and people just felt like, oh no, he's not a part of that.
You definitely had a wholesome vibe, and you've played a character with a wholesome vibe, you know, quite a bit. Alan and Two and a Half Men, and now a new sitcom on NBC, Extended Family. John, is this something that you're good at, being, you know, like a single dad and trying to co-parent? Is this something that maybe you have experience with when you were younger? And is this something easy for you to do?
Well, you know, it's never easy. Being a parent is incredibly difficult to begin with. Being a divorced parent, you know, is a whole new set of tough. I was a divorced parent for a while. And it's a very lonely, vulnerable state to be in, you know. When I was doing Two and a Half Men, I was going through my divorce while doing the show.
Okay.
And they would say, oh, is that cool? Does that help you as an actor? And I was like, no, it just sucks. It's like I can't escape it. It's like I'm in it during the day, and I'm in it when I come home. You know, but the nice thing about extended family is it's about this incredibly amicable divorce, which is actually very similar to what my parents had. And it's based on it's inspired by a true situation. The owner of the Boston Celtics and his wife share an apartment with her ex-husband. They did that because they didn't want the kids to have to move between the apartments. And obviously, since he's the owner of Boston Celtics, he could afford his own place, you know. So that very specific, situation allowed them to do that. Obviously that's not something everybody can do, but, you know, when these people had the opportunity to try doing this a new way, they did, for the sake of their kids. And I thought that was a really cool idea for a show.
It's got to be tough being the dad too, when all of a sudden your ex-wife's new boyfriend owns the Boston Celtics, and now the kids are instantly big fans of this guy, and you got to constantly remind them, hey, that's, you know, I'm the real dad. You don't like it. You're not supposed to like him.
I'm the real dad here. Yes, yes, and that's a lot of what the show is about. But it's also about accepting a new situation that, you know, because he's also a fan of the Boston Celtics. So if he's going to get floor seats out of this, hey, you know, maybe this isn't so bad.
Oh, I get it.
My ex-wife marrying somebody who's better than me in every way isn't a terrible thing if I get the floor seats as well.
Oh, man. John, I know we have to go, but I just wanted to touch real quick, outside of acting, a podcast. You're into the Iran-Contra hearing, Lawyers, Guns, and Money, which is about the Iran-Contra hearing. How do you get so involved and interested in that?
Well, I love podcasts. I'm addicted to podcasts. And this story came to me by a guy named Jack Bryan, who did a wonderful documentary called Active Measures. But it's actually this bananas true story. It ended up being this huge case of international intrigue, and it almost brought down a president, and it was this big deal. But the background story is this nutty, hilarious, awful story of this young guy who was a public defender in Miami in 1986. His first felony that he's doing, you know, and he's all excited, he's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, is this guy has been arrested for having an illegal machine gun. And the guy says to him, the reason I have an illegal machine gun is because I'm secretly running guns for the CIA. And the guy says, sure you are. He gave him a phone number and said, you don't believe me? Call this number. He calls it, and it's the White House.
Oh, God.
So this young public defender gets sucked into this huge story where he sort of accidentally uncovers this whole secret war that's been happening, he sort of has to divulge it, you know. It's a wonderful story about this guy, you know, going against the headwinds of history, and what's been great is that since it's been 40 years now, everybody can tell the backstory to it. Everybody, a lot more people have sort of opened up about what actually happened. When they gave me the opportunity to be a producer on this, I thought, okay, I'm in. This story is nuts.
It's called,
and I think it's a really fun, entertaining podcast.
It's called Lawyers, Guns, and Money, about the Iran-Contra scandal, available wherever you pod. And of course, Extended Family, 8:30 Tuesdays on NBC. John, big fan. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
With John's mother being a playwright and his father being an actor-singer, it was at the age of 12 years old that John figured out that he wanted to become an actor. And his parents supported him, sent him to a lot of camps where he perfected his craft. His first acting gig was actually the understudy of Matthew Broderick in the Broadway play Brighton Beach Memoirs. You know, he drew a lot of comparisons to Matthew Broderick when he was young. So that was his first legit acting gig. But outside of acting, his only other job, handing out flyers on the side of the street, which he said he learned a lot about rejection. John might have been a pretty good salesman. You know, salespeople definitely have to put up with rejection quite a bit. John's big break, of course, came in 1986, the John Hughes film Pretty in Pink, where he played the role of Ducky and became a member of that Hollywood Brat Pack, or kind of like an outsider of it. You know, talking about Rob Lowe, Demi Moore, Ali Sheedy, Emilio Estevez, Andrew McCarthy. You know, John was kind of in that scene. Said he never really got into any trouble, and nobody ever offered him cocaine. That definitely doesn't seem like it was the norm for the rest of those guys. John had a pretty innocent look to him, which might have helped steer him from trouble a little bit. What a cool guy. Probably with parents in show business, John would have found his way into that world eventually. He does say that nepotism is somewhat of a thing in Hollywood, but nevertheless, made quite a career for himself. And like I said earlier, past episodes of Celebrity Jobber are up on celebrityjobber.com. You can follow us on IG, Celebrity Jobber Podcast. Also our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/@CelebrityJobber. And stream us on all podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please subscribe. Would love a 5-star rating and leave a review. So thanks so much for listening. I'm Jeff Zito. We'll see you next week with another episode of Celebrity Jobber.